Why do you think there is a lack of representation of females in leadership roles, and advice for those that want to step up into a leadership role from your own journey and experiences?
You need to know what is the difference that you bring to the equation and make it work with your environment. I think as women in tech, we are rare. We bring a thinking and a depth of building an environment that is rare and consequently very precious. And we really cannot sit on that as I'm trying to hide and look like everybody else.
Looking back to those earlier years of your career, what would you say to younger you? What advice would you have as you've navigated through that career?
Everybody knows about imposter syndrome. We probably all have it at some point. And actually just using that, not as a negative thing, but actually as a positive thing. You know, it's not that I feel like an imposter. I'm just not comfortable. And so, you know, what do I need to do to make myself comfortable?
Welcome to this very special episode of the Career Confidence Podcast. I'm really excited for this episode today. So as some of you are aware, we do run events called Sisterhood Socials, and we record the panel conversations to upload onto our podcast so nobody gets to miss out. So our recent event was last week, and it was called The Diary of a CTO. We had three incredible female leaders on our panel: Eglantine, who's the CTO of PEXA, Catherine, who is ex-Jetstar, and Amelia, who is the current CTO of IBM. Now, these women are so inspiring. What they share is just absolutely incredible. The feedback from this event has been out of this world. So I'm really excited that you get to listen in to what was discussed. Be prepared, take some notes. I know I am. I know that on the night I was very present, but also, of course, looking around the audience and making sure that it was really hitting home what they were saying. So I'm going to go and listen to this episode again and grab my notepad and pen, because there were so many nuggets of gold. So if you couldn't come, or if you were on the wait list and you didn't get a chance to get the ticket, then this is your opportunity. Nobody gets to miss out. So enjoy this episode today. Reach out to me. Let me know what your biggest takeaway was. Please also share this episode. We really need to make sure that the voices of females in tech and females in leadership in general get out there. So if you get anything from this episode today, share it with a friend, share it with a coworker, share it with a family member, and let's make sure we're spreading these messages, these important messages, with the world. So enjoy today's episode. Let me know what your biggest takeaway was, and over to the incredible panel. Enjoy.
I am loving the energy in the room tonight. Thank you to you all for coming along tonight. And the energy is only going to get better because I am so excited to get started. We have got some really key questions that hopefully you're just going to take so much information away from. But have a think, anything that really jumps out to you, you want to have a dive into. At the end, we're going to make sure that we give plenty of time to hear from you all tonight. So any questions you've got, just have them in your mind, ready to ask. And here we go. So thank you to the three of you for coming along tonight. And I'm going to give you all the pleasure of introducing yourselves. You'll do it better justice than I will. So Eglantine, you are to my left. If you want to give everyone in the audience a little bit of a who's who about you and bring us up to date with where you work at the moment, that would be fantastic.
We'd love to. Thank you very much. But first of all, listen, I really want to thank you, you two wonderful ladies. You're creating such a beautiful and vibrant community. We are absolutely thrilled to be here tonight. And it's middle of the week. It's getting a bit cold. And all of a sudden, we have this high energy, beautiful. So very, very grateful for that. Thank you so much. So I'm Eglantine Etienne, a terribly unpronounceable name, and I really apologize for that. I will not hold any of you to account if you're just calling me, whatever you want to say, hey, and I'll come and have a drink. I'm the CTO for PEXA. PEXA being a world first, it's a platform business. We are doing e-conveyancing. That doesn't sound very sexy, but actually it is. It's when you settle a property, you're bringing the banks, the conveyancers, you're bringing the land registries all together. And we are doing this digitally, so the transaction happened in a very seamless way. It's the only place in the world, Australia, where it happens. So it's a world first. And we are, with our friends from ThoughtWorks, we're exploring the UK endeavor right now. So pretty, pretty exciting. Prior to that, I was working for Dulux Group as the CIO and then for OI, which is glass manufacturing, as a CIO as well. So probably 10 years now, 10 years plus as an exec in technology. On the personal front, I have three gorgeous children, teenagers. We had a bit of a laugh when Catherine was telling Amelia, who just have a young child, saying, you know, after, it's going to be easy very soon. Mine is 12. I said, oh, mine is 17. But I have three gorgeous teenagers. My husband and I have been living here for 10 years now. Prior to that, we lived in many countries. I was really lucky to work in 20 odd countries in the world. But Australia caught our heart 10 years ago while I was traveling and became a citizen a couple of years ago. And I want to say it was a huge deal for me. It's a huge commitment to this country. So very, very honored to be here. Very honored when we acknowledge the traditional owner of the land, because I'm feeling deeply grateful to them. But very happy to be here with you tonight.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Catherine. You can pronounce my name, but you can't spell it. it's a forever kind of contention of spelling my name, but I've got used to it over time. I'm former CTO of Jetstar. I've worked in airlines for the last 25 years, and I've just had 9 months off work. And it's been incredible and thought-provoking and relaxing. And not relaxing and stressful. It's been everything, but it's been good, and it's been good for me. I get to start a new job next week as well, though. So,
do you want to tell everyone? Are we allowed to say?
I'm starting at Medibank next week. So from aeroplanes to health and well-being, and it's a really exciting role, and it's quite new in terms of ventures and well-being. So. Super excited about that. I guess on a personal note, I'm kind of similar to Egantine in terms of traveled so much, and Australia captured my heart 18 years ago. I am originally from England, but my accent doesn't typically give it away quite so much these days. But yeah, Australia definitely captured my heart. I have a 12-year-old. I am now waiting for the teenage years that you have warned me about, but at the moment it's good. She hates her dad, not me. they have their little fights and I just play mediator all the time. So I'm super excited to have such a wonderful group of people to talk to, but also this platform, because that's what's really important and that's what kind of keeps these stories going, and we can talk about what that looks like as we go through here.
Thanks. So good evening. Lovely to see you all. I think a big thanks for hunting me down and making me join. It's been just amazing. She's very persistent, and I must say, just so delighted to see you all. So, Amelia, I go by Millie. I've been at IBM for nearly 13 years. Prior to that, I was a sort of pseudo business owner student. So I started IBM as a graduate. I've been really fortunate in my journey at IBM to, I guess, be in the role I'm in today. Lots of challenges on the way, lots of opportunity. I studied website design, so that was something that I guess gave me a lot of technical and business acumen, and it is something I love. I find tech sexy too. I think it's something that you can do a lot with, and I really enjoy that. I'm going to try to move to Europe, so I'm coming back home, but my goal is to take my career in the other direction and pursue an opportunity, I guess, outside of Australia for a while. So excited. I have a 3, nearly 4-year-old. She sometimes calls my team bald babies on meetings. That was the moments you go, oh my goodness, my team are really, really grateful. I remember one time I was talking to my boss from Asia Pacific and I had a little packet of snacks and I was dropping them on the floor just hoping she'd just stay below the below the line. And so I think, you know, probably being a working mother in this sort of role has its challenges, but awesome opportunities. So thank you.
Amazing. Yeah, I think you'll all agree. We have an amazing panel. So thank you so much for being here. It's an absolute honour to be in your company. So Eglantine, I want to come to you next. So I'm always fascinated by why and why women choose career in tech, because one of my passions is we need to get more young girls into this industry. It's a fantastic industry. So what's your journey been like? And were there any sort of moments that you reflect upon that you go, oh, that's kind of what got me interested, if you could sort of pinpoint a few things?
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot. So I think it's how do we influence young girl? I'm not going to be your answer. I wasn't a young girl at all when I leaned into technology. Actually, I came from a very traditional family. My dad was from the south of France, kept on telling me, you know, my darling, don't work too hard. You'll be an interior designer. You'll marry a great guy. I studied business and finance, and I started to work in strategy consulting. And it was really interesting, but there was an arrogance about it that didn't completely gel with me. But in one of my mission in where we were setting up a telco in Netherlands in the early 2000, we went into this big mission where we were designing what's going to be the business case, what's going to be the strategy, and then what are going to be the process, what are going to be the people, and what is the tech that is going to underpin all that. And that was amazing. That was amazing to watch because I watched it end to end, and how it turned into a reality was when we were bringing the people and the technology in. That's where the company became a reality. So there was a first aha moment. I was sitting with the strategy team, so far above, and I got dragged into that, and I was very impressed by it. So from there, there was a first curiosity, a first, oh, wow, that's interesting. So within this large organization, I moved to something more technology-oriented. And from there, I took a job in a manufacturing organization, which was fabulous in the sense it was a really large organization that were giving you amazing learning opportunities. But very early then, I was into a program of work in Europe across 12 countries, completely redesigning the operating model. It was an accumulation of companies acquired. So no culture, no common backbone. And technology was the vehicle to that. We had this program of transformation, but it was really a really deep cultural transformation. And I was there at the beginning of that when we were thinking about it, dreaming about it, and then making it happen. And it was amazing. So after this one, I was really hooked. And I was hooked because I had the chance to work into all those crazy places. I was in winter in Estonia. I was in Sicilia. I was eating duck skin in Hungary in an old factory. I was in Ireland. I was in Poland. I was in Spain. I was everywhere. It was just amazing. But as well, it was a way of bringing people together, which I had not anticipated. I think the other thing that stuck with me was the low level of ego of the people working in technology. I was coming from the strategy side. I had worked a lot with the sales side. And all of a sudden, I'm working with the tech. And they are beautiful, and they are open, and they are curious, and they're a bit, you know, grumpy and all, but you can find your way around it. And I absolutely adore that. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, how do we bring more young girl, I would say, how do we bring more women full stop and at any stage of our career? Actually, I had a lady joining me in that program, which was based in Switzerland. She was in her 50s, an amazing, really bright accountant. And we brought her in. She nailed it. She was just such an asset to the program. But she joined the technology team in her 50s. And by the way, she was French speaking. She had to speak English. Like, it was just unbelievable. So how do we attract more women in tech? That's really what stuck with me is, you know, how do we create that sense of opportunity for women of what technology can be and what technology brings? And I think for all of us, what sticks with me and that has been a lesson in my career and still a lesson today is just like the curiosity and the openness with which you embrace all those different things. Because whether you're 14 or 20 or 30 or 40, you don't know. You know, you're going to get into something. What are you going to love? What is it going to trigger in you? What are you going to learn about it? You need really to lean to this into an open mind. So I think for me, it's first of all, how do we create bridges for women at any time? And how do we really encourage young people and people in general just to just lean into those experiences with a bit of curiosity? Because I think tech has so much to offer. We are a talent magnet, but people don't know that.
Beautiful, beautiful story. Thank you so much. And I think the power of curiosity is massive. And I think one thing that I think that we could all do in our own individual roles is, one, be curious, but also if you spot someone else around you and you think, I can see potential in them, giving them a nudge to be curious about something out with their own role. Sometimes we all just need a little nudge in the right direction to get us going. But beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that. Catherine, I'll move on to yourself. And I think like your journey is really one that we could dissect and learn a lot from as well. So for those of you that do not know Catherine, you went from call center to CTO. And that is a huge career journey to go on. Now, could you walk us through what you feel have been the key career paths that have really shaped that journey for you?
Yeah, and let's be honest, it wasn't in one day, right? So it was like, wow, what a leap. I started in a call center at a startup airline in 1997 in London. And I did that purposefully, and I don't know, you know, what necessarily went through my mind as a 19-year-old doing that, but what I kind of thought was startup, opportunity to learn, try new things, be curious, and it kind of just grew from there, ultimately. Some of the kind of key things, one, that learning and that growth, I would always ask, I'd be like, can I go to the airport and throw bags on the airplane? And they'd be like, you want to do that? And I'm like, yeah, because then I can kind of, you know, I understand the concept and I want to see what those people do. And if I can understand what they can do, then that maybe I can kind of apply that somewhere else. And that kind of curiosity just kind of weaved me through multiple different roles. And so I started in operational roles. I opened airports. I trained people on the systems. And there's two threads throughout my career, technology and customer. And when I connect those two things, it's kind of threaded through this kind of weird journey of moving from one airline in the UK to go and work for a tech company, but I was employed because I understood airports and things like that. So I was understood as a knowledge worker. That kind of made me travel to a million different places. And I think we all have that kind of adventurous nature about us. And again, when you kind of get taken out of your comfort zone, you can really grow. And I just was always taken out of my comfort zone. I went and worked in Kathmandu. I worked in Moscow and Russia. You know, I never knew the languages, but I was there to help problem solve. And that problem solving came about through customer and through the technology that we would apply. But I don't call myself a technology person. Like, that's not just my identity. I'm a customer person. I'm a digital person. I'm a data person. You know, there are so many different labels that I would kind of apply to myself. And sometimes I think it's a little bit weird that I ended up as a CTO, but I embraced it. And that's probably the kind of key thing that I learned. Just, you know, embrace things because you will learn and you will grow, and you don't have to be completely ready either, because actually, you know, you can ease into things as you kind of progress as well. So.
Love that. That curiosity keeps on coming up. It's definitely a word to listen out for. But I think also what you demonstrated was courage. And I think that's also a skill. It's like, confidence comes from courage. It comes from putting yourself in these uncomfortable positions. And that's what you kept doing. And that's why you're now the CTO of Medibank. So congratulations. In Medibank, yes. And you are the CTO of Jetstar. Amelia, I want to come to you next. You started as a graduate. Now you're the current CTO. That is quite the journey. And I'm sure there's a lot of women in this room right now that be like, how have you gone about that? So can you just sort of give us some like key sort of steps that you took to get to the graduate level? To the CTO. Yeah, in one day.
I was reflecting on it yesterday. I don't know if there were steps. I think I kind of I fell into it, and I'll talk about that in terms of the journey. So I'm also an adventure-loving chameleon, so it resonates with me. I love travel, I love adventure, and I love diversity, I guess, in anything I do. So I've never gone for a role by title. In fact, when I was asked to interview for this role, I was like, no, this is just not for me. I don't fit the mold. I don't want to be that person. It doesn't match who I think I am. So it was kind of getting a little bit of motivation to be brave to do that. But if I go back to the very beginning, I think I'm bold in asking for things. I hope I do it with humility, but I don't always probably. So I, as a new graduate, prior to becoming a graduate, I'd spent 7 years, as my dad called me, a perpetual student, learning, working out how I could study and snowboard throughout my winters and then do some more study. So I went into IBM and it was, oh, this is real, but I don't want to do the job they want me to do. How do I ask for a different one? So I muscled up my courage and I went to my to-be boss and I said, could I be a project manager? I think I bring all these great skills and it would be really good if you'd let me be one. Honestly, she actually said, yes, but you can be a project coordinator. And so I went through that journey and I kept gravitating towards how did the systems work? How did the technology integrate? And people say, you have to choose, Millie. Do you want to be a business or a technical leader? No, I don't want to choose. So I went on and I've had many roles and some of them I've created because they didn't exist. I like problem solving, so I would see a path to maybe improve something. I think rather probably annoying because I keep pushing for those initiatives and trying to make those things happen. I think the funny thing was when I went to apply for the CTO role, I felt there were so many more people better than I. And so there's vulnerability in going to do something like that, but I've not looked back. I also had a very interesting challenge of getting the role and finding out I was about to have my daughter. I was like, oh my goodness, now I have to have this first conversation. And I have to say the support from IBM, I guess, and my boss to let me really prove myself for 9 months, take my journey on maternity leave and come back was, you know, so important and so valuable. So I think being bold, but having purpose in how you kind of go forth. And I try to never be perfect for the next role, because if you wait, you know, why do it? So I think taking that leap when you're like 70% ready is something. So my next leap is to try to go and do a role that's got a bigger scale in a geography outside APAC. So that's my journey, but definitely not overnight.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that, Millie. And again, so many key takeaways. I think I absolutely hate the stat that women wait until they meet 100% of the position description, the job criteria before they feel ready. Like the power of just throwing your hat in the ring, pushing yourself outside your comfort zone and seeing if you get the opportunity to step into that position is so powerful. So I'm nodding away. I can see a lot of you nodding away and hopefully someone's going to go away and go for that next promotion before they feel ready. But yeah, start before you feel ready is absolutely such a powerful takeaway. I actually love history, so let's get a little bit nostalgic. If we can think back to when you were all, you know, maybe embarking on your career or embarking in a role that was maybe your first foray into leadership, whatever is more pertinent to you. But looking back to those earlier years of your career, what would you say to younger you? What advice would you have as you've navigated through that career journey? And this is a question for all. So, Eglantine, I'm going to start with you. You're to Millie.
I was thinking I have a bit of time. It's going to come back. Okay, what advice would I give myself? I think if I look back, it's early 2000 in France, very high unemployment rate, probably 12%. I remember going into those consulting companies interviews, and we were around the table and we had to eat each other. You know, we had to fight each other. That was the interview process. That was really disgusting. You're 20, you're there. So I lived through that. And for me, you know, getting a job and keeping your job was extremely serious. I wish I had more lightness about it. I was 22. I had 40 or 50 years of career ahead of me. I wish I was lighter about it, and that I would lean into it with all the curiosity and the lightness, really. Just, I think you're definitely at that time. I was, okay, what's next? And what will look serious on my resume? You know what looks great on your resume? It's experience. It's that you've tried both things. I had this amazing lady in my team who comes from Hungary working in the data space the other day. And she was saying, oh, you know, when I arrived, it was extremely hard to find a job. She was coming from super big names of consulting organization. So I decided to work for Airtasker and I took some cleaning jobs. And she said, and I didn't tell my mom because I didn't want her to be ashamed. I said, I would have been your mom. I would have been so proud. So proud. Like nothing is in your way. You decide that you come to Australia and you're going to get into, and nothing is in your way. That's pretty amazing. So, if I could have been a little bit lighter and more curious about it, I think that would be great. I think as well, and particularly when I went into technology, I had a lot of comments on, a lot of expectation of what it was to be a leader in technology. And I remember some comments when I went into leadership position about my earrings. So I always make a point. This is my discreet earrings tonight. Ash works with me can confirm that. This is my discreet earring. I made a point because when I was 25, one of my leaders told me, you know, now you're on the exec floors and you have to, you know, stop the boots and the skirts and stop the earrings. I thought, really? And it became an anchor point of, seriously, I wear them like some men wear some funny socks to remind them to be a bit light. I wear the earrings because this is about you bring what you bring into the conversation. How do you fit into this conversation? What is the richness of what you're going to bring? And of course, you need to lean into that system and make it work with the rest of the system. You cannot be just this thing that hurts everything. But I wish I had understood as well that, you know, you come with greatness and great potential, and it's not, you don't have to comply. I think that's it. You do not have to comply to the mold that is in front of you. You just need to understand how what you bring will bring value to the situation that is there.
Now your turn.
Yeah, my turn. I love your defiance. I love it.
It's incredible. And I think that's what you grow with, right? As you take experience, as you get older, your ability to show your true self and be yourself just becomes easier. And it's really hard to tell your younger self, just be yourself. Like, it's, you know, they sit there and go, what does that mean? Like I use the term now, I am enough. And I use it a lot. And whenever I'm going into something scary, I go, no, I am enough. And I've only learned how to do that in the last kind of, actually the last 9 months. And I guess the other thing, everybody knows about imposter syndrome. We probably all have it at some point. I was listening to a podcast today and they reframed imposter syndrome just about being outside of your comfort zone and actually just using that not as a negative thing but actually as a positive thing. You know, though it's not that I feel like an imposter. I'm just not comfortable. And so, you know, what do I need to do to make myself comfortable? So just reframing those kind of ideas that we kind of get told, oh, my God, you got imposter syndrome. You know, what are you going to do, run and hide? Well, no, I am enough. I'm going to turn up. And so how do I turn up? And I think it's really important that we reframe those things for younger people.
Absolutely. I just want to turn the question around and say, what would I tell my older self that my younger self used to do? Because I was just thinking, I don't think I had much fear and I never cared too much what other people thought. So I just kept going. And I'm sure people, you know, pointed behind my back or said the things that they said and I'm a victim of, not a victim, but I'm a person who's experienced, well, how did she get that position or how did she move through so quickly? But I never cared. So it was like, just keep going. Just let it go. Just don't think about it. And someone said, never compare yourself to others. And weirdly,
that's something I've had to retrain myself to do in the last few years, you know, far more senior capacity, because the playing circle is different. The things that you experience, and I guess that innocence that I brought then, somewhat had faded. So I'm kind of looking back and saying, how do I be a bit more like that kind of bold, fearless, you know, young person coming into the organization? So slightly different view, but that's kind of my flip.
I love it. There's actually one book that changed my life, and it was The Courage to Be Disliked. If anyone's read it, I'm sure you agree, it's an amazing book. And if you haven't read it, I highly encourage you to read it, because I realized that I was trying to be a people pleaser and I was putting everyone's opinions first. And as soon as I read that book, I was like, no, I'm going to have the courage to be disliked, and not everyone's going to agree with everything I do, but that's also okay. You know, so that's a really powerful book that I read that I encourage everyone to read. But look, I want to move on.
Let me just interrupt you, because I want to bounce, because I know it's not in the list of questions. You know, we had the list of questions.
No, I love it. Bounce.
We're going to pretend that you think deeply about it, but it's not about it. But I just wanted you to launch on the imposter syndrome, because it's not in the list of questions, but I know like everybody is feeling this. And I saw a face in the audience today who reminded me of a question a couple of years ago in a Telstra call. I was in this panel on the Telstra Vantage, on women in technology, your experience of women in technology. And I can't even remember exactly what were the notes. It was about, I can't remember. But it's the experience of women in technology. In the panel, I was from very far, the less senior, from very, very far. You had Robin Denholm, who's the chairwoman of Tesla, right? And a couple of high execs from banks. You had really, really great people. And we are there preparing for the session. And one of them said, oh, well, you know, but I'm a bit embarrassed. I don't know if I'm really qualified to talk about this. And we were all like, oh, yeah, no, me neither. And we had this moment, I think, how deep that runs. We had the most senior women in tech, some of the most senior women in tech in Australia, around the table, who were saying, I don't know if I'm qualified to be a woman in tech. I just want to call out, you know, we need to cut ourselves a bit of slack, because every time we're trying to fight. Yeah, well, that was my little story.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
Thank you. Just interject whenever you want. But I want to come on to leadership now, because Pam and I, we work with a lot of businesses, and a lot of our clients say to us, we want more females in leadership roles. In your opinion, going through this journey yourself, why do you think there is a lack of representation of females in leadership roles, and advice for those that want to step up into a leadership role from your own journey and experiences? So Eglantine, you've got the mic. Go for it.
I was ready this time. All right. So, you know, first of all, we talk about this in a tech context, but it's, as we know, it's really not a technology problem at all. We are seeing, so numbers are vaguely evolving. In Australia, we have 10% of women CEO, but it's pretty much the same in the world. If you're looking at most of the big countries in the world, you're looking at the US, looking at China, they never had a leader that is a female leader. So there is really this very deep societal challenge that we are working through. So actually, I was with my team today and getting them to think through that. Obviously, like a lot of you, I'm working with a lot of male. And I was getting them to think about it as engineers. How do you reverse? How do you understand the problem? How do you decompose the problem? Because the answer is always, oh, we don't have enough women in the pipeline. All right. So what is blocking the pipeline? What are things? Okay. Well, you know, women are still holding two times as much unpaid work as men are, or in depending on the culture and the country, it's between 2 times and 10 times. For me, it's 10 times. I just want to call it out. My husband is not watching.
We won't tell him.
He knows. But this is really preventing your ability to be in the office a lot of the time. So he said, how do we workshop that? Well, flexibility in work is absolutely critical. All right. So now if we take this into account and we want to work part-time, how do you create meaningful roles that are part-time? How do you split the work in a different way, et cetera? So it's not good enough to say, you know, the pipeline and blah, 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 blah. So I know that I'm getting, first of all, really not a tech problem. Actually, tech is not doing that bad because we are very flexible, because our skills are transferable. So tech is probably not that bad if you're thinking of ratio. I'm sitting between property, tech, and legal industry. In the legal industry, large majorities of graduates and lawyers are female. 14% of female are the equity partner of law firms. I think they are 70% when they start. So the tech is not doing that bad. So really just working through this as engineers and decompose the system. And the question is not, you know, I can't, because it really have to turn it. What needs to happen to grow my pipeline? What needs to happen to bring this talent? I think for us as individual, it's what I was talking about earlier about, you know, the earrings and it's about something that one of my mentors told me a while ago, which I really loved. She said, you need to fit without fitting. You need to know what is the difference that you bring to the equation and make it work with your environment. I think as women in tech, we are rare. We bring a depth, a thinking and a depth of building an environment that is rare and consequently very precious. And we really cannot sit on that as I'm trying to hide and look like everybody else. Where are the earrings? Because the earrings are the sign of this is my superpower. This is what I'm bringing to the equation. But I think we really need to own that really strongly and not try to fit and say, I have so many of my wonderful female team members who are telling me, oh yeah, but I'm trying to arrive on time even though the children drop off. No. Just own the difference that you bring to this equation, because as a woman in technology, it's very rare and very precious.
And I will take that and go, representation, therefore, is really important. So because if you don't see it, how do you know that it's a place for you as well? And that cuts across all intersections of diversity, that if you can kind of create representation, then people kind of know, oh, well, they've done it, I can do it. And I think that's really important. But I'll just kind of say, I've been looking for a job for the last, 3 months. I intentionally took 6 months off, but I've interviewed for roles over the last 9 months. And the fundamental issue that I saw, and I was talking to people about CIO roles, CTO roles, and chief customer roles, and all of the CIO and the CTO roles, every single position description said I needed at least a degree in computer science and 10 years experience as a CIO. We have to change the mold and what we're looking for. We're boxing it in and kind of going, if you don't fit this, you're not right. I got overlooked for so many roles that I know I would knock it out of the park. And it was always, oh, they went with someone traditional. And I'm like, that person can't tell a narrative at an executive table about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and why we need to spend this kind of money. I can't. And it's about just, you know, blowing it up and going, I don't accept that. And so that was my response back to most of the recruiters. And Georgie and I have had this conversation as well. And, you know, that takes some confidence to do that. It takes knowing myself as well and what value I bring to the table. And I don't have to be like all of the previous people to me. I can be different and I can still do great things. And I think we just, the whole system needs to rethink it.
So I would start by saying my husband actually has the majority in our dimension, which is amazing. So that gives me a lot of opportunity to do what I do. So grateful for the fact that he's now learned the washing machine. It's in good state. Everything's happening. I've done a lot of, I feel confident. I've been away traveling this week for 3 days. And everything's in order. So my little one's cared for and we're doing all the things as a family. So I think having that in our dynamic acknowledgement, that's what works for us, and giving me the confidence to say that's what I want to do has been important. I guess you talked about changing. So that whole thing around the position description, I'm fortunate in the IBM exec leadership team, we have a pretty good balance.
But we do work hard on how do we put out position descriptions that don't take away that sort of thought of could I do the role? How do you think about including that flexibility? Because it's super necessary. But also I think in our capacity, it's the sponsorship and the championing for those people, because you do get into those scenarios where, dare I say it, someone else is just, I'm just going to give them the job. And they're going to overlook a broader set of candidates. So I purposely have those talented females, I think, that are good on the bench. But at the end of the day, it's the right person for the role. So, but having them, I guess, giving them the confidence to go for the interview. And even if that means learning from that, trying again and having that experience. So having the home support is huge for me. We all together need to work on, I guess, in any industry, how we create more compelling reasons for women to go into leadership, but also make sure it happens, not make it a statistic, I think. So it's my journey.
Thank you so much. I actually cannot wait to go into Q&A because I've got a million and one questions, but it's over to you guys soon. But Catherine, that is really powerful. Like, if you feel that you have been done a disservice, having the confidence to speak up and give that feedback, that is the only way that the narrative is going to change. So if you, any single one of you have that experience in a recruitment process, whether it's for an internal role or an external role, use your voice and speak up. And a wise woman once told Georgie and I, she's in the audience tonight, Catherine, I'm going to give you a shout out, because Catherine once says to Georgie and I, stand up, speak up and be unapologetic. And every time Georgie and I need to step outside our comfort zone and feel, oh, should we say anything? We think, what would Catherine say? She'd tell us to be unapologetic. So that was brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was amazing. I'm going to move on to tech trends and adaptability. And look, let's talk technology, because I think there's a lot of technologists in the room tonight or people that sit in tech divisions. And look, technology, it ain't going anywhere, but it also evolves at such a rapid pace. And that comes with a little bit of pressure as well. So how do you as individuals, how do you manage to stay, you know, ahead of any emerging trends? And also, how do you ensure that your teams are equipped with the necessary tools and leadership in order for them to thrive in their roles as well?
Happy to start.
Millie, on you go.
So I think on the tech trends, it's something I have to do. So I guess there's that expected currency. I've got my areas that I love the most. So I will, and of course, there's no surprise, but Gen AI and obviously AI and the application of AI is a huge thing right now. So for me, it's knowing that a couple of days ago, this amazing large language model called Llama 3 came out and what it does. And today I actually got the team to showcase some of that, and understanding the value of that, though, in a business context is really important. So it's all great if it does cool stuff, but can you apply it in a business setting? So I try to link my learning there. I love learning from the team. So one of the things I most enjoy in leading a technical team is getting into the detail, a bit like what you described before. So listening, learning, asking silly questions, getting hands-on as well. So we're not exempt as executives from doing that. So I have to deliver, stand and delivers on the technology. I've got to be confident in how I speak about it. So I think putting it into practice, you cannot possibly know everything. So having that network and being honest when you don't know it. But there's a key set of trends I think you've got to kind of stick to. In terms of the leadership tools, we've, fortunate in the way that we've got a lot of things available to us. So whether that's learning, face-to-face, all those kinds of things. But I think having people come together, I've spent the last 3 days in Sydney in a series of workshops, and the value that some of the more junior members are getting from in-person interaction with some of the more senior members, seeing how things, you know, it goes beyond that kind of tooling and that visible application of leadership. But the external dimension of that as well is, I think, having that, you know, confidence to go and speak at events. You know, next week I'll be at a CIO conference in Gartner, and just staying current and going for it and saying, I know I can do this. So
I think voraciously reading is one good thing, but I think the real world application is so important. And so I had dinner with a friend last night, and I love noodling over problems. When you just kind of get, you get all geeked out and you kind of work through how can we solve this and how can we do this? Those moments are so important because actually kind of, having those conversations with people, we discuss the polarity of Gen AI and what it means for TV commercial production. It was so left of field in terms of our conversation, but we just dissected the polarity of it. Like, what does it mean for the creatives today? What does it mean for the tech people? How are they going to produce it? And just having those conversations, I think, are super important. And then you're right, just allowing people to have space and time to play, and not just the people that love it, but the people that don't love it as well, because you're not going to get to understand it unless you do. And I think one of the things that we add value as a group of CTOs is because we understand tech and because we understand data, our ability to create change in what is coming is so critical. And so we need to learn and understand it, but we need to have the seat at the table so that we can actually talk about it as well.
Couldn't agree more with what I just heard. And I got the excitement. We spent the morning on Gen AI with my team, and we're just problem solving and getting all this application. And I can tell you it was so energizing and so much fun. Agree with all of that. I think a couple of things I would like to add to this. How do we stay ahead of the trends personally as a team, etc.? For me, it's really our job to keep our board and our exec team ahead of those trends. So while we are doing all this in depth and hands-on, I gave all my boards in the last meeting. I was doing a cyber presentation. They all got the book. This is how they tell me the world ends. If you haven't read it, I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend it. This is how they tell me the world ends. But which they all loved and got scared to death. But really making sure that they get this exposure, they get this level of contemporary knowledge as well, because ultimately your board and your exec team are going to make those decisions. And it's not only you, your role is to make sure that the system is equipped to make the decision, not only to rely on your good sense making. I think as well, for me, it's about the curiosity and the people I pick in my team. So getting people who are really technology curious, who get the joy out of it. I have a really broad curiosity. Technology is one of my curiosity, but not my only. But I have people in my team who tell me, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do that job. Seriously. And when you hit the jackpot when you have that, because they will go and they will try and they will experiment. And I think the last one, and I'm saying that not because Catherine is here tonight, but it's picking the right partners as well. So how do you stay ahead of the trend? For us, it is a very, very specific choice. Who do we work with? We pick a couple of companies, a handful, really two, three companies who are really bleeding edge in their field, and we stick to them as close as we can.
Amazing. This is the final question we're going to Q&As, I think. Yeah. This is the final question we're going to some Q&As. This one's about confidence. So I have a podcast, Catherine, you've obviously been on it, and Amelia Eglantine, you'll be on it soon. But look, I called it, just saying that, I called it Career Confidence for a reason, because I honestly believe that confidence and self-belief does underpin where we go in our careers. So I do believe confidence is a skill, and I'd love to know how you all personally have gone about building your own confidence and your own self-belief, and any advice for those in the audience that are struggling right now with imposter syndrome, with a little bit of lack of confidence. How have you gone about building it, and what advice do you have for those that maybe are lacking it right now?
So I was telling you earlier, I'm sorry, the imposter syndrome, it doesn't go away. Huh? So I think we have to live with that. But for me, there is the very basic, you start into something, you are 70% ready, sometimes less. If you decide to take that jump, there is a bit of fake it until you make it. Okay, I need to get into that rhythm. I just need to get into that rhythm. I will figure some of it out on the way. I cannot know it all right away. So there is a little bit of that. But what I have found very helpful was when I'm in there, really focusing on the task, and it's very basic, but focusing on the task and not of you, very often, we look at ourselves in those process. Oh, am I the right person? Am I doing this properly? Just focus on what you have to do. What is the exciting problem you're solving right now, and putting all your energy on that. And what has helped me tremendously is once you've done all of this, then you step back. And I remembered when 10 years ago, when I was getting out of my first CIO role and getting for the next one, and I couldn't tell really what have I done and how have I done. instead of writing a resume, I took a notepad and I wrote stories about, and I remember I arrived and this was the team and this was the culture and we did this and then we did that. Wrote pages and pages of this until I could see from the first internship that I had to this moment as a CIO, the patterns and the things that, oh, well, you know what? Actually, every time I landed with an awesome team and the team was very diverse. All right, that's something, actually, I'm pretty good at it. It's not that I'm telling myself I'm pretty good at it. It's when I read all my notes and all the stories, I can see these patterns of things that are happening every time. And you just build in on this. Yeah, actually, I've nailed it. So taking the time to look back. And I want just to illustrate it very quickly. This day was the strategy week. This week was a strategy week for PEXA. So we've been presenting, I had 2 days presenting to the board and 1 day working with my team on that. So it's been pretty intense and I'll have a couple of drinks after that talk. But I arrived in PEXA 2 years ago. So 18 months ago, I presented the strategy to the board. And I was going into this last week very nervous. We have so much to do. And the road is quite narrow and it's all those challenges and it's pretty exciting, but very tough. I haven't done that, you know. And I thought I need to anchor this conversation into whatever I told them 18 months ago, just to benchmark it. And I took the first page of the presentation, I took this board through, and we had nailed it, but I just couldn't believe it reading it. I had told them 5 things that we were going to do and why. And not only we had nailed it, but the business impact was super, super obvious. And I think that's an exercise we need to do. Just step back and just take stock, capitalize on, yeah, you know what? I've done that. That's mine.
Thanks. I really struggled with this question. And I'll say that openly because how do you qualify your own confidence to be able to kind of speak to people and kind of go, I'm confident. I'm like, well, that feels shit. Like, you know, hey, look at me. I can stand up in front of you and be confident. Well, you know, most of us probably are having our moments beforehand where we're, you know, kind of, you know, self-doubting ourselves and going through all of those things. So what does it truly actually mean? So I really struggled with that kind of how do you qualify it? And so I think for me it's about surrounding myself with people that actually will tell me I've done great things, not because they're just sitting there going, you're amazing, but because they appreciate me, that I give them my time and my feedback and they do the same for me. So it's kind of that bolstering and ultimately all of those people. And if you listen to those good people that have good things to say about you, those things can build your confidence. And I think so kind of surrounding yourself with the right people is really important to help continue on your journey of kind of growing into that confidence. But I really struggle with the word of confidence because, like, well, what am I, you know, I always go, how am I showing up? I never pick the word confident when I think about what are my words for how am I showing up today. You know, it's my humility, it's my openness, it's my curiosity, and it's other things that I show up with. And the confidence just, you know, it's just the thing that happens because I'm standing up here and talking to everybody. It's not actually, you know, that I am confident. So it's a bit of a wavy answer, but yeah, that's for me.
I'm going to tell you, I didn't read the questions. Well, actually, I did. I did, and I promise it's true. I did read the first question, but honestly, I'm not good if I have to think too much about it. So I'll tell you my probably. I generally feel and have felt in my early career, I've had a lot of confidence. I'm able to articulate what I need. I'm more a thinking than feeling person, so I'm pretty good to say this is what we need. I'm not always great at expressing my emotion, so that's probably something where it's good in certain roles, but then it has its limitations. But I had a setback. So I was talking about my journey of my career, if it were floating down a river, and I don't know if anyone's floated down the river in an inner tube ever, but it kind of stops when the current does certain things and you end up somewhere. And I felt like that was good. I could stop. I had an opportunity to do something new and then off the river would go and I'd get another job. And not typically ones that I'd looked for, they sort of came to me. And I
I always just did what I loved doing and I was passionate about what I did and I just wanted to do stuff because I love making stuff happen. And then I was reflecting on the fact that as you move into more senior roles, the river gets narrower. The things don't always move forward and there are less places to stop. And not as many people were going, gee, you're doing an awesome job. And for various dynamic reasons within the organization, so I lost some confidence. I was like, oh, I'm not getting that feedback. Am I doing something wrong? Am I not as capable? I feel like I'm expending energy in the right places. I'm trying to balance all these things. And I think it was realizing that, one, I'd hit that, but then there's this inner critic. It's like, do others see you as you feel, how you see yourself? So my journey was like taking stock of that and going, hang on, you've got this. That confidence is there. And, you know, if someone just call BS if it's not right. Like I think at the end of the day, I'm who I am. I bring myself to work. I be the best I can be. I'm happy to take on feedback, but I'm going to be confident about what I do. If I believe in it in terms of what it's going to do for the business and what it's going to do for our clients and most importantly, my team and the people. So I guess that was just kind of a mid-career journey of confidence setback, but I've learned a lot from that experience as well. So just sharing.
Thank you so much for sharing. I guess that's why they say it's lonely at the top because you don't have as many people there, but this is why Sisterhood Club exists because we do need cheerleaders. We do need people saying, you know, you've got this and you deserve better and things like that. So thank you so much for sharing that. Can we just quickly give a hand? Because that was amazing. Yeah,
really amazing.
Thank you so much. Q&As. I'm sure we've all got some questions. So over to the audience. Yes.
Hi, ladies. Thank you so much. This has been so insightful. My question is, at your kind of level of seniority, which is something I'm certainly striving for myself, no doubt kind of like the courage to be disliked, there's going to be moments, of course, where you want to, you know, walk the halls, drive that influence to gain consensus on a decision. But I am increasingly facing moments when that can be challenging. You either don't have the time, there's certain kind of constraints in place. I'm wondering if there is a time that you've had to make a difficult decision that wasn't a popular one and how you stood through that.
I'm so conscious of the fact that I have the microphone and I just want to hand it away. I don't like reflecting back on COVID because it was a very different, awkward, weird time, but I think it was a very real moment where we have had to do things that we didn't agree with or didn't like the impact of them. And, you know, I worked in an industry that had to stand down 80% of the people. I didn't want to do that. I didn't like doing that, but I kind of knew the bigger reason. And I think kind of sometimes anchoring back to what and why is really important to kind of bring people on the journey, but not everybody is going to be on the journey either. And you kind of need to decide, you know, work out who the ones are that sometimes need to be left behind and what's the impact of them being left behind. Because you can't always gain consensus. And I wouldn't necessarily strive for consensus in everything that you do. I think there are some really important moments that impact people that you probably do, and there are some where you just can't. I think you have to kind of sit in that polarity of those leadership roles of kind of going, if I know that this is good for the company, and even if I don't agree with it, I need to do it. So how do I kind of anchor myself to that so that I can kind of explain that to people? During COVID, I cried a lot with my team. Like, and yeah, and that was important for them to know that I was kind of mourning the loss of what we were all feeling. I was on the same journey, but we were having to make tough decisions. So it's kind of just, it's pulling out your kit bag around what do you need in the moment and what does it look like? And there are multiple different ways that you can kind of manage those situations.
Thanks for asking the question. I didn't pick your name. Kate. Okay. Thanks for asking that, Kate. Very similarly, I just finished last week a reorganization in my team and more than 10% of the team is going. So, actually I've worked with an amazing group of people and half of my direct reports are gone. So let me tell you that there's been a bit of tears with that. Now,
What I would say was different between this decision and decision that he would get easy support and would be more easy let's say that I lean into it much more deeply. You know, it's this one-way doors, two-way door. This is hard to reverse. I really probably took much more time for me to get comfortable with it. So not to everybody, because you cannot get everybody across a decision like this one. But I really spent a lot of time designing very precisely, what am I trying to achieve? What do I need to achieve? I'm the leader of this organization. Ultimately, it's not about short-term game. It's about the longevity and the stewardship of the organization. And it's about bringing the next leaders as well. So I really spent a lot of time deciding that for myself. And when I had the confidence I wanted, I went with that. Where in general, if you can go with consensus, you can be kind of okay. You know, if you get it wrong, you have a team behind who say, okay, we got it wrong collectively, we'll be fine. I think the other part for me is I created emotional space for me, because I knew it would be hard and I knew that a lot of people would not understand and I knew that there could be personal attack. And I really got ready for that. And I'll tell you, I usually don't talk about those kind of things to my family. I told them, listen, this is what's going on. This is why I believe it's a good thing to do. So again, I have a series of teenagers, so they tell me this capitalist thing. And I'm like, well, we will never do that. But I told them, and I said, it's going to be hard. And for a while, let me tell you that I will need the emotional space. And for a couple of weeks, they cooked for me. They were amazing. But I received a text from my daughter on the day where I was talking to my team, saying, you know what, I love you and I think of you. And I think just this awareness that I had before on, I know that I need to create the support space around me, because for a while, there's not going to be a lot of support and it will be a tough decision. And I'll have to own that decision. I'll need to have to show that. So what is the back-end support that you can create for yourself as well?
I'll just give a couple of quick points. I think sometimes I get referred to as firm but fair. And so I think if it's a decision that relates to the impact to the individuals, someone that you, I often say I'm not friends with the people at work, but that's with purpose, right? At the end of the day, it's a professional organization. So I don't want to have that extent of connection where that makes it that bit harder, and it does. But I think separating them out. So if it's a business decision, I'm pretty straightforward, quite declarative. I think it's important, but also I also do the email followed by footsteps. Now I do the email followed by some sort of digital mechanism or a phone call, because I still try to have certain individuals that I build some consensus with. So you've got a balance, but you never get it perfect. And I think just have that, pick the things that you really want to focus in on that and think about why you want to achieve it. So, yeah.
Any other questions? I'm running.
So you've spoken a little bit about AI and how quickly that's kind of coming in and changing, you know, how we work. I know, you know, there's companies that are starting to adopt AI in terms of, you know, looking at CVs and resumes and picking up keywords and, you know, dismissing CVs that don't have them. Do you think that has the potential to negatively impact women candidates if they don't have, you know, the right buzzwords because they are applying because they haven't met 100% of their criteria? And just generally, yeah, what that means for us.
I'm happy to start here. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We know that those models are trained on the existing behavior. And the existing behavior, I mean, we're exactly talking about the existing behavior right now. We are talking about the leadership potential. So we are just accelerating a system that has been creating the challenge that we're facing here. Now, that being said, I think we're aware of that as well. So right now, there's not a lot of conversation about AI that don't have what about the ethical part of AI? What is about the risk framework of AI? So that's an amazing maturity, because 20 years ago, when we all leaned into the digital story, there was not a lot of discussion around when I'm going to vaporize all this work, here is what's going to happen. I don't know if you had the chance to read. There's a book from this wonderful journalist, Kara Swisher, who's been covering tech for the last 30 years, and particularly all the development in the Silicon Valley. She just wrote this book, Burn Book, and she talks about that really well, you know, the lack of social responsibility from most of the tech organization. So I think we've been through this, and there is a level of awareness right now that is
not going to fully protect us. We all need to lean into it, but at least there is an awareness and an active engagement. The second thing is there is a lot of startups that are tackling exactly that. I was talking to a wonderful Melbournean lady who is running this startup, and sorry, the name escaped me. I'll have to share that. But really about how do you write inclusive email? How do you write inclusive job description? And how do you provide the coaching on the moment? So I'm writing an email. It says, you know what? If you say that, here is what the person is going to read. Here is the impact it's going to have. And I'm thinking, this is so wonderful, because I can tell you, I'm going to share it with some of my peers and colleagues. But actually, now that we know, there is a path as well to turn it for good. So I think it doesn't remove anything on the level of awareness has to be huge. One of my other really big concern right now is we are all leaning like crazy in these trends, and we should, and we have to. That's our responsibility. We talk a lot about the AI divide. So, you know, our social responsibility to our employees is to make sure that they are equipped with those skills so that they are still relevant and that our organization is still relevant. But that being said, we are leaning into something we don't know where we are in 5 years and 10 years. It's the first time we are living that. We just don't know. We can't tell. So there is something quite confronting about this, which really requires a huge amount of caution, for sure.
I have nothing to help right there.
Look, I mentioned the Llama 3 large language model before, and, you know, without sort of putting out a plug for IBM, I guess the thing that I'm proud of is that our focus is on ethics around AI and AI governance and on making sure that the corpus of information that the AI is trained on is appropriate in terms of whether it's the corporate use. You know, I certainly do use ChatGPT, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, it is sort of like an unfettered scrape of the internet. So you look at what it's trained on, you're going to get hate speech, profanity, inappropriate context. So if you wanted to set it up in an appropriate architecture that addresses the risks and other considerations, you would want to look at the type of foundation models you're using. You'd want to have a really robust position around the governance of AI, because a lot of people inside organizations are tinkering and little parts of the business are having fun. You know, the question in whether that's being used, whether that's appropriate, or whether, in fact, there's some interesting stories around law firms and other cases that have used the data in all sorts of strange ways. So I think having a really solid understanding of all the different elements of the AI architecture, but at the core, it's what is that foundation model or that large language model that you're actually interacting with, because it will give you very different contrasts. I'd like to think you could define a model that removes the bias, and in fact you could even have it look for the kind of the opposites. So there's things we can definitely explore. So it's not perfect, we've still got a long way.
Hi, one from Catherine. Love to hear from the three of you tonight. Given that we're at an event about technology and women, I just would love to hear each of your perspectives on how you take up your role in the context of network versus task, because for a long time, like, one of my greatest regrets in my career was how long I spent working really hard and being a very good girl and thinking that that's what it would take to get the next opportunity, and then consistently watching men that failed to deliver and weren't qualified get promoted. So I would really love to just... And the reason why I'm asking is because I think that we don't talk about these things. So if you could have a conversation and just talk about what is your approach to networking? What is your approach to the amount of time you spend in relationship versus your energy back inside the organisation down with your teams?
You're asking the hard questions, and it's the perfect question to ask. Your network is what will get you to where you need to be, right? When I left Jetstar and I left knowing I wasn't going into another job, I purposefully did that because I needed to disconnect, shake it all off, work out what I wanted to do next. The number of people that said to me, the recruiters are your friends, but your network will get you your next job. And you can't just turn up and kind of ring everybody and kind of go, hey, I haven't spoken to you in 5 years, you know, but I'm looking for a job. Can you help me? Like, that doesn't feel right either. So therefore you have to nurture it. You have to consistently nurture it throughout your career. you don't have to nurture all of it at all the time either. So I typically start the year writing down who's the key people from my network that I need to make sure that I foster those relationships right now, because I can help them or they can learn something from me. And so I'm intentional about that, but I put a lot of focus on it. And it's really hard to kind of break it up in terms of percentage, right? You can't, you know, you're doing the job versus telling people about the job that you've done without feeling like you're self-promoting, but you need everybody else to promote you as well. Because if other people aren't talking about you and all the good things you've done, then why did you do it and what was it for, right? So there's a balance of that, and there's a balance in terms of how you want to approach that. But those are the kind of things that I would kind of seek out to kind of work through. I had an old colleague reach out to me about 3 weeks ago now. She said she just finished her job. She sent out 10 text messages in total, 5 to women, 5 to men. It's a little A-B test. 5 women came back and said, when do you want to have coffee? She didn't hear from the guys. And so just think about that in the how do you foster that network? How do we kind of create a network where guys kind of respond as well, right? And it's not to say that men don't ever respond, but how do you create that focus and that kind of, you know, that lifting up? We all get told lift everybody up. We'll lift women up. We actually lift everybody up. So how do we kind of just make sure and nurture that across the whole environment?
Sway? I don't know that it's only network the problem you're talking about, though. I think there is a level of comfort in promoting someone who looks like you or who looks like, you know. There is something about comfort. My observation as well on top is in Australia, we still have this system of school where you have those cliques that are growing separately and that filter through that I haven't seen anywhere else. So that creates a level of challenge. That being said, networking is an important path. I'm personally not the best one. Very similar to you, there is a list of people who I really trust and admire, and I make sure that I keep contact with those people. I make sure as well that I spend as much time lifting up people. So it's the two-way. And I think don't underestimate, you know, it can be actual networking and mentoring or being mentored, etc. But it can be, you know, participating to a podcast and to a talk like this one. It doesn't have to be, this really going and asking. It can be as well fun and sharing. And so you have to have a blend, because you know what? If not, it's not too hard. I don't know how you all do it, but our crazy hours. I have those 3 kids. I'm traveling back home 20,000 kilometers away from time. You know, it's just like it's already so full. Like when you find the time, well, sometimes it has to be as well light and beautiful and easy. So it's more like what's the combination that will make it manageable for you?
I'll just say one thing quickly. I think of like mentorship, sponsorship, and networking, like those 3 pillars, because you need sponsors. To your point, they're those that have a seat at the table that might help with that decision making. So you kind of have to have a number of key sponsors. And then it's the mentorship, I think, is that piece around as somebody that's executing in a role that you kind of want to sort of aspire to take on some of their qualities. You want to have those mentors. You can have the hard, good, bad, ugly conversations with. And then it's that sort of overarching network. But I think for me, it's always like, who are those people that are going to help sponsor my next step? Or in my case, I've got mentors and a network at the moment in Germany. And the funniest thing was he called somebody else who was also from Germany who happens to work in Asia Pacific. And then it all kind of, the little ring of networking activated. And I think that's been but without that, it wouldn't have happened. So that's that planned as well.
One more question.
Hi, Mary Beth Hosking here. How are you? Thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful, just have to say. I wanted to pick up on something that you said earlier around this idea that the job didn't go to you because it was you weren't the right fit, or they wanted to go with someone that was a bit more expected. But this is for all of you, so we may want to answer this. I'm seeing in my network So I'm in the C-suite as well. What I'm seeing at the moment with the economic downturn is that a lot of women are being pushed out so that that companies can bring in their white 45 to 55-year-old male, because there's that sense of comfort, because we know that. Are you seeing that as well? Because I've actually seen it over this last 9 months, and it's actually really telling about what the opportunities are that are available to women wanting to actually get to the executive. We're actually now facing that that idea, and I'd love your thoughts on that.
I mean, this is potentially a question for you, Georgie, as well, because you see the market and you see what happens. You probably actually also kind of have some more qualitative evidence behind what might be happening. It's hard to say, right? You know, I don't sit there and kind of go, oh, I didn't get that job because a guy got it. I sit there and say, I didn't get that job. I thought I was right for it, and I was just generally overlooked for it. I don't even know half of those roles who got them, because ultimately you rarely hear unless you try and seek and find it out, and I haven't tried to seek and find it out because I move on very quickly. So I don't know, but I agree with you in terms of the sentiment at the moment, the economy and all of those things. Maybe people are taking safe choices, and sometimes you see a safe choice is a woman in a role as well, or you know, some other kind of construct of that. So I don't think it's kind of hard and fast and it's like absolute, but potentially, but who knows, right? Have you seen anything in the market that potentially suggests that there's a new bias?
I think it's always been there. I think we're now all aware of it. As recruiters, I think it's really important for us to tap women on the shoulder, because women are going to come and just apply for these jobs, right? We go and have to headhunt them. We have to pipeline them. We have to constantly be reaching out. A lot of the women, if I sat there and waited for a CV, I'd be waiting for years, right? So I think it's always been there. I think, however, now we are more aware of it for sure. And it's why we run these events, because we want to keep elevating the voices of females and showcase what a career in technology can look like. Because I think representation really does matter. And again, if the three of you can do it, so can I. But it's challenging, but I've always seen it. It's always been there. And I think now it's more visible for the world to see.
I will have to pray to erase that from the recording, but it pissed me off so much, this conversation. I cannot describe, and not only for us women, and really not only for us women. I've observed that in the last 9 to 12 months, and I had a lot of people. So I've been in my role 2 years. I'm not actively searching at all, but from time to time, there are people that I love and I keep catch up and regular who are working on the market. And they've been telling me that. They've been saying, you know, after the wave of COVID where we had this huge talent gap, and all of a sudden we all went into diversity, flexibility, gender diversity, neurodiversity. How do we create? All of a sudden it went back really brutally, back 5 days a week if you're not in the office, and all of that penalized women. And they were saying, actually, there is this big conservative. We moved from innovation, digital acceleration, and the topic moved to operating models, efficiencies, reviewing. So we had this massive trend. Why does that piss me off so much? First of all, I'm sorry, it's always the same. It's always the same population that is putting on back a couple of years ago. And we saw after COVID the women's agenda just going back, which is immensely frustrating. But we're in a country that have been really struggling with productivity. We are building a future for our children. We know that what has worked in the past, the conservatism, is not working. It hasn't been good enough. We need different thinking. We need innovation. We need to be more bold about this. And without diversity, it is not going to happen. It hasn't happened in 25 years. It's not going to happen now. So when we talk about being conservative or risk adverse, I really want to challenge that. Actually, it's the other way around. We are lazy. We are lazy. We are not risk adverse. We are lazy when we're saying, oh, okay, let's take a safe pair of hands. The safe pair of hands that took you to the safe trajectory, which is just putting us behind all the economic evolved countries in terms of productivity and in terms of future prospect for us.
I'm in.
Pretty cool of that.
Well, without being, I guess for me, not to be contentious, so I've not, fortunately, we haven't had that, at least in the space that I'm in. Our programs around neurodiversity, so I'm the neurodiversity exec, have continued on. And I live a luxury if we get to kind of work from home 3 days a week. I do the drop-offs, I do the things. So I feel very grateful, I guess, having some of the other dimensions. And I know it's out there and I know it's real. And I guess it's, I don't want to make it sound that it isn't the case, but I guess as an alternate perspective, at least in the little circle that I'm in, that has felt not the case. But we have to work hard to make sure it isn't the case as well, right? So you still got to push for and make sure you know. So two sides.
I think we'll wrap it up there because I think we're all dying for another drink. But thank you so much. And honestly, can we just have another round for Wellness?
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.